Hello everyone, welcome to Sir Robert Paterson Academy podcast. I am Livia Briggs, I lead on the social media in the SSLT, which is part of the student senior leadership team in the sixth form. Today I'm delighted to be joined by our head teacher, Mr. Hardy.
Good afternoon, Liv, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I think I'm okay. Good. But I have to say, this is the first podcast that I've ever done where I haven't just been listening to it. So I'm hoping you're going to treat me gently.
Yeah, well,
because
same.
This is really, really new for me. But I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too.
I am. So we'll start off with the Jubilee. Just generally, what is it and why is it so important?
All right. Well, first of all, I suppose to me, I ought to start with where I've come from and how I've got here. Because I've never been in a school before where we've celebrated any kind of Jubilee. I've worked all over the country. I've worked in some new schools, which of course haven't been open long enough to have a Jubilee. I have worked in some old schools, but they were usually failing and then got knocked down and had new builds. So to come to a school where the history is so well known, it's so vibrant. You know, we've had 70 really, really strong years by and large, where the school's been pretty successful at the part of it, at the heart of its community. It's really important to me because it's a privilege to be part of. And it's new territory for me, and I'm a really experienced head teacher, so 10 years into that, to be doing this and holding Jubilee celebrations for a school is a new experience, so it's new learning, and that feels really quite exciting. And because we're 70 years old, there's lots to celebrate, there's lots that we're adding to. So in those 70 years, because the school knows its history so well, after 50 years, 20 years ago, not only is there a plaque up in the Great Hall, but the previous chair of governors, who was here for a very long time, actually wrote a book about the school, which has been in the building for 20 years. It's been on sale. It's even been given away for free. But it's about 1.5-2 inches thick. And so it's great that we know our history, but actually it's good that we're making new history. And so we've got youngsters in this Jubilee who are adding to that book for the past 20 years with Dr. Kassane, which is fantastic. We've been looking at study skills, where youngsters can go to the Lincoln Archive in Year 12 and in Year 8 to look at the history of the school in real deep detail, in ways that we don't hold records for anymore. We've got trips that either are going to run or already have run, that are, you know, walks around the castle, heritage walks, heritage open bus tours around the area. And I think it's really important in society to know where you've come from, know where you are, and hope to know where you're going. I think the Jubilee is a really, really important part of that. So for me, really exciting. We'll probably talk about it later, but obviously one of our previous head boys came last Friday, Nigel Huddleston MP, who was gutted that the board outside my office with all the gold leaf on of all the head boys and girls started the very year after he was here, which he kept talking to me about repeatedly. But he was great to talk to. He taught me quite a bit about his experience here. I learned a lot. It was nice to hear his feedback on how the building and our facilities have changed. And it was great that he spoke to young people as well and spoke about his experiences and how he thinks that these days education is better. So it's really insightful. So far, what are we in? I mean, I'm counting off the top of my head. We're probably, it's probably week 8, week 9 of our celebrations. Crikey, I thought the most important one, Bake Off. This week, it's been superb that what we've managed to do over a 12-week period is to add so much content in, and it's also important because it's about learning. So we've got youngsters in the next couple of weeks. We've got Cultural Capital Fortnight, where we had a briefing about it with staff this morning. They're going to be hearing and seeing and experiencing so much about the school they didn't know, from personal development lessons where they've got history sessions where they're going to learn new things. We've got an afternoon tea for dignitaries, some including people who came here for school on 29th of June. And we've got an opportunity for youngsters who asked for new things to learn about the school, to learn about heritage, so on and so forth, to actually put that into practice. So it's been great so far, tiring, lots of extra work on top of being ahead. But at the same time, I think it's really, really valuable. And we've got some photographs and I suppose some things we could put in a time capsule for 20 more years' time when someone else might dig it up and think, wow, that's how they were doing it back in that day. Mm-hmm. So it's been great so far. I'm really enjoying it. Are you?
Yeah, it's very fun. It's cool to meet like different people that have been at the school. And because I did the alumni week as well, then it was cool to speak to, like, there's so many, you don't realise like how many different people go off. Because like my parents, they stayed here and then it's like, they went to NK, but they went to like local schools obviously, and then it's like, they just do normal jobs, but then there's some people that go out and do like, I live across the world. And you don't really think that someone who just comes to like your school then moves away and does cool stuff.
But isn't that exciting?
Yes.
And in this day and age, what's a normal job?
Yeah.
I mean, as we often speak to you, there are some jobs that will be out there that you guys might be doing as adults when you get to my age that don't exist yet.
Yeah.
And that concept still boggles my mind as somebody leading an education.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic that, that anybody comes in and talks to our youngsters about their experience here, as long as it's hopefully clean.
Yes.
You know, the truth is that the, this school and academy has been at the centre of its community now for, as we said, 70 is a long time. Lots has changed. You know, but not only that, we're in a position where I think it is great to know that a former student has gone on to become an MP and an international minister for trade and the government. I think it's possible. It shows it's possible for our curriculum and education. That person went to Oxford. Great. You know, that shows it's possible for our curriculum. And coming back to this year, I put out a letter earlier in the year because one of our young ladies in year 13 has gone into Cambridge.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that there is that chance, if you're the right person with the right grades and the right aptitude, right attitude, you can get there. And for me, that's still quite heartwarming and quite fulfilling.
Yeah,
because my job can often deal with a lot of negativity, particularly with the pandemic that we've had as well in the past, although hopefully we won't talk about that too much today. So it's great when you can see a lot of positivity and fruits of your labours come out of the work that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important.
Yeah. Why did you want to become a head teacher of this school specifically?
Well, I, if I'm telling you the honest truth, there are two answers to that. The first is that, that before you were born, and it actually scares me to say that, so I'm glad I'm sat down. Back in 2001, this school became a language college back in the days when Labour were in power, and about three, four years in, they brought in the specialist college programme, and languages here was very successful then, as it still is now, and we became the first language college here, an SRPA, in the county. And very shortly after that, that was in the autumn of 2001, in the January of 2002, I became what is doesn't exist anymore. It's called an AST, an Advanced Skills Teacher, where in modern foreign languages, you can probably see where this is going now, I went through Ofsted assessment to be assessed as advanced skills, which at that time meant having up to 20% of your timetable working in other schools, sharing good and excellent practice. And because this school, therefore, had become a language college, coincidentally, it's the first school I worked in as an AST. And although most of the staff have changed, because let's face it, it's over 20 years ago, I worked in what was the old languages department, now the maths corridor, and it was an esteemed institution. I was working at Sir William Robertson Academy at the time, in a different guise, and they were letting me out to come and work on projects, and I came here, and I really enjoyed it. Now, it probably wasn't the best of temperatures to have taken and the bellwether of whether I should apply for a headship, but when I then saw the vacancy in 2018, I was looking to come home because I had been a head for a good few years. I'd done that job anywhere between Peterborough in the south and Sheffield in the north, with lots of travelling between there and Nottingham and Derby, where my other schools were, and I was also an executive head. And the truth is, my children were growing up and I wasn't really seeing them, sometimes taking me 2 hours to get to and from work every day, along with a lot of stress in between, because that's what headship is. So my wife and I had a talk about whether we were going to move back towards Nottingham, where she's from, or whether or not I was going to come home and work closer to home. And the latter one, I saw the vacancy, thought it was a great place to come back to after my experiences from 20-odd years ago. And the rest is history. After a very strenuous two-day selection board, I was chosen as the new head. So it came together nicely. And I can't believe it's been 5 years, actually.
No.
A very, very long period of time, although in some respects it feels like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think we've done quite a lot. So I guess that's, I'll leave it there for now.
When you originally started your teaching journey, what was it specifically that you wanted to be head teacher and not just like any language teacher?
When I first started teaching, I was determined I wasn't going to become that head teacher. And I can explain why. I went to university to get my first degree in Manchester. And although I enjoyed doing my degree, I didn't enjoy living in Manchester, although I'm a City fan. Don't hold it against me, although we have just won a treble. So for a time capsule moment, I do think I should mention that in a recorded item. So God bless you for allowing me that latitude. But I did some police service after finishing my first degree. I felt that having done a four-year degree with a third year abroad teaching, sort of foreign language system work, I came back from that and thought, I don't think I'm ready to go into a classroom full time. I'm not entirely sure I was mature enough either. So I wanted to do something different, and I tried joining the Special Constables in Manchester, got in. but I wanted to do it as a career and see if I could learn some life skills. And so I applied to Lincolnshire, I got in, spent a good couple of years doing some work there, grew up a lot, saw a lot, did a lot, and it taught me a lot about life. And so after that, I then went back to university. The summer that I got married, I got married quite young, to do my PGCE at Nottingham. And my wife was already a teacher, albeit young in her career, and I was working shifts and, you know, dealing with all sorts of things in the police, and she was teaching and being fulfilled by it, making a real difference, and so I decided to join her. But after my police service, I determined that I was just going to be a really, really good teacher. And quite early in my career, having been head of department for a little bit at William Robb, I then went on to do my advanced skills I mentioned earlier. And that was me. I was happy. I was really happy. But then we had children, and, you know, things change. You don't realise until you become a parent how much life is going to change. And after 6 years of being in an AST, I thought to myself, do you know what? I'm going out of school a lot. I'm seeing other institutions. I was delivering conferences regionally and sometimes nationally. I was doing a lot of work around the county, in and out of schools. And I learned a lot as an AST in a way that I didn't realise I would do. And it made me kind of thirsty and hungry, and I wanted a little bit more. So I decided then I'd probably like to become a senior leader. I went over then to work at Nottingham City Council as a national strategy consultant, which was one of Labour's flagship national projects for school improvement. I really enjoyed that. I was leading on languages in primary schools. And I thought as an AST I knew a lot of stuff. And then I went to work in primary schools and realised I actually could learn a lot more. And it made me a far more rounded practitioner working in primaries as well as secondaries. And then I became the monitoring advisor for NQTs, New Qualified Teachers, which meant I was working in primary and then I was working in secondary. So I learned an incredible amount doing all of that. And then I was definitely ready, in my view, to go on to senior leadership. I was working with a lot of head teachers in primary and secondary, felt that I could do the job, wanted to get some experience as a deputy first, which I then did in a school in Nottingham in the inner city, which was a single set school, challenging school. I learned an incredible amount. And it was from working with the head there and across the trust that I realised that I thought I'd learned the skills necessary. So I spent a year and a half maybe as a deputy, quite a short space of time really. And then they were opening within the trust a brand new school, which was part new build and part refurb in the city of Peterborough, coincidentally called the City of Peterborough Academy. Now, from where I live, that's, you know, about an hour down the A1 on a straight road. So I thought, you know what, I'm up for that and I'll give it a go. Went for the selection board, got interviewed, got given the role, and then spent several years building that up from scratch, which most heads don't do. You never get to build a school from nothing. And it was in a very challenging area where the school that had existed on that site before closed about 2006. So I was opening that in 2013. When it closed in 2006, it closed with only 8% of children getting 5 good GCSEs with English and Maths, which is why it closed. I took it to outstanding in 5 terms, which shows it's possible. So for me, it was my I don't know, toe in the water. Mm-hmm. When you're building a new school, you stop with 1 year, then you have 2 years, and then 3 years, and so on and so forth. It was my opportunity to see, well, could I actually do that? I was seeing all these you know, halcyon figures, who I saw as head teachers, thinking, wow, you're amazing. I'm not sure I can do what you do, but actually, I found out steadily that I could.
Yeah.
And then I went on to be an executive head as well. So for me, probably an odd journey, you know, flip-flopping from doing work in secondary to a good level of teaching and learning, then going into primary, and then going in back into secondary, and then making my way through. Quite an interesting little move of sectors. But I went one that stood me in good stead, and then I spent time as a director of schools, an executive heading by a different phrase, in different places, Sheffield, Derby, head office in Nottingham, where I took over an estate of schools. I had 3 schools of my own that were all converted during my time, in various states of disrepair. But once this job came up, it was an easy decision to come back.
Mm-hmm. How would this school where we're at now compare to other schools you've worked at, like working with secondary students versus primary students? How does it?
Well, the scale's very different for starters.
Yeah.
You know, most primaries, and I have been a vice chair of governors in a primary school before, most primaries are always going to be smaller than we are there. Mm-hmm. So you might have a small village school that's got anywhere between, you know, 30 and 120 children, through to, you know, your average school is probably 350 children. There are some that have 600-700 in, particularly in some of the cities. I think one or two in Nottingham I used to, you know, work with, who were that large. But most of them are never going to be as large as secondary schools, for obvious reasons, and nor should they be. So the scale is very, very different. So when some teachers, particularly primary heads, said to me, you know, oh, my school's growing, and it's growing from 320 to 400, that is to them clearly a significant growth, and it is of any school of that size. But we, you know, with 252 in a year group, we work at scale, and I think that it's a challenging leadership terms to work at scale. So primaries are a very different beast, very exciting beast. A lot of great work goes on in our primary schools that secondary teachers don't always appreciate. That's the first thing I would say. But for me, I'm a secondary animal. I used to teach down to 4 and 5 year olds at primary. Love it, but for a completely different reason. But teaching youngsters up to your age and up to A level was always where I felt academically stretched. And I think for me, that's what teaching secondary should be doing, particularly when you get into key stage 4 and 5. You should be feeling tested, excited, academically stretched, great questions being asked by fantastically able people. And I think that is something that always interested and attracted me. And as a modern linguist, we're quite hard to come by. And as a male modern linguist, even more so. So for me, it's always the opportunity to be a male role model for some youngsters as well as being a modern linguist. It's quite unusual, particularly in Lincolnshire. So, interesting career path so far.
Yeah, so if money was no object, you have as much money as you want, then there's top three things that you would implement into our school to make it how you would like.
Oh, I can almost cop out on this, because there is actually a school rebuilding programme at the moment nationally.
Yeah.
There's only about 50 schools were in the first wave, and I haven't bothered applying. But if money was no object, and actually I don't think I want to apply, because I quite like our building.
Yes.
But if money was no object, I'd have a brand spanking new building, with its own sports facilities and swimming pool and 3G pitch. And I would just throw money at IT to make sure we had a new computing lab, which we are trying to get at the moment, but it's out for a bid that I haven't had passed through yet. I'd have math suites in English, in music. I'm trying to get one in, put it in music as we speak at the moment. I would literally, it would be a brand new build with every squeakingly wonderful facility we've got. I think I'd go for a fleet of minibuses, because coach costs at the moment are crazy. And I think that I would also, not so much spend money on the school, but spend money on the curriculum. And I think that I would like to see science in particular, gutted and rebuilt. I'd equally like to see the mental health hub in a better building. And I would love to be able to spend ridiculous amounts of money, if I could do, particularly post-Brexit, on international programmes for children to go abroad. Because I do think that's a little bit harder now. And we tried with our trips programme to make sure that we skin that cat, and we've got the Loire Valley going. First week in July, we've already had one trip go this year to France. I think that is the kind of the missing link for us at the moment. But it's a really hard question, because to be honest, I don't have a lot of money here. So as soon as you say money's no object, I get a little bit dizzy. So it's a question of, I'll probably have to come back to that at some other point when I've thought of other new exciting things.
And this will be our last question before the break. But if you could employ anyone at the school, dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, do you know what? When I interview for recruitment, I always ask pretty boring questions in comparison to that. That's pretty tough. I've got a short list. I'm not sure I can give you just one, because there's so many parts to a secondary school in particular. I think if I could, I'd start with, this person's dead actually, but for my PE department, I would have loved to have appointed to teach PE probably Bobby Moore or Jeff Hurst, who were part of our 1966 World Cup final winning team. Jeff Hurst, because he was a striker who scored a hat-trick, and Bobby Moore, because he was just a tremendous defender and captain. So leadership-wise, I would have loved to have had someone like that in my PE department. If I'm being cheeky, I know, but it'd be lovely to go to that sort of level. I think from a sort of philanthropic perspective, but also with sort of computing in mind, Bill Gates, who I know no longer works at Microsoft, but used to build that company from the back of the garage. That sort of person from a business development perspective, to help our business department, for computing, to help our computing department, and philanthropy, just because of our SRPA values, our community. I think he'd be a great person to have on board, and he still does presentations and still works with his wife, I think, to talk about their philanthropy and charity, charity work. But he's got such a wonderful attitude towards ensuring that poverty, particularly in Africa, is a thing of the past. I think I'd love to have him on board. I've got a current one for you. I'm really quite excited about this. It's really quite controversial.
Okay.
But I don't mean it to be political. Yes. Have you ever heard of a guy called Alistair Campbell?
No, but that's okay.
All right. So if you do listen to podcasts, I do recommend this one.
Yeah.
There was a podcast called The Rest is Politics.
Yeah.
And it has Alistair Campbell, who used to be the communications lead for Tony Blair's government when it was Labour in power. And also Rory Stewart, who is a member of the Privy Council, former Tory MP for Penrith in the Border, up in Cumbria, Scotsman, who's written an excellent book called The Places in Between, from when he walked across Pakistan, Iraq, Iran and Afghanistan. I'm currently reading it, so it's a great piece of work. But the reason why I bring in Alistair Campbell, he currently has a book out, which is not meant as a plug, it's a great, great piece of work. Yeah. It's called But What Can I Do? Mm-hmm. And it's a book about how people, but particularly young people, how they can get interested in politics, mm-hmm. but particularly in public service and making a difference to society. And that's the thing that I try to do from a different angle. I haven't read the book yet, but I do listen to the podcast, and I am reading Rory Stewart's book. But I think Alistair, from the point of view of engaging young people in public service, engaging young people with our values, and engaging young people in making a contribution, I think he'd be a great person to have on board, because he's very knowledgeable, but also just all sorts of great stuff like wild swimming. You know, so you'll find him in the middle of a lake somewhere in a wetsuit. I think that's quite exciting for Empress to do. So there you go, there's three for you, yeah. off the top of my head, and that would work.
That's brilliant. Okay, thanks. We'll be back after the break. So Robert Paterson Academy is a large comprehensive school just to the south of the city of Lincoln, with 1,300 students currently, including 150 in the sixth form. As I can advocate being in year 12, the opportunities here are tremendous. So if you are still unsure of what you want to do in September, I really recommend you come and join us. We still have some external spaces for 2023 entry. If you would like further details, please call the Academy or contact us by email on sixthform@srpa.co.uk. That's sixthform@srpa.co.uk. So we'll start off with how you feel you've impacted the school the most since joining.
Well, crikey. Well, it's been 5 years of change. Mm-hmm. I suppose there isn't a short answer to that, but the shortest answer I can give you is I've changed everything. And that's had the most significant impact. So even down to where departments are based. I mentioned earlier, because of the language college thing, languages used to be on the maths corridor, but they don't always teach the full cohort, whereas maths are always teaching the full cohort pretty much in every subject, in every year group, right up to and including the top of the school. So we moved where certain departments teach to make the learning experiences better for young people. We've done everything from that to, if I'm honest, changing some of the teachers. Mm-hmm. Because when I first came, what was really interesting is that the youngster said to me, teaching's rubbish here, so we don't behave. And the teacher said, we can't teach good lessons because the students don't behave. Okay, well, so you've got some saying I can't teach well because of that, and some saying we don't behave because the teaching was not great. So what we needed to do was to deal with the behaviour issues and put a culture in place full of clear expectations, discipline and sensible expectations of conduct. But we also needed to make sure that the teaching was better, and so there were some difficult conversations to begin with. So in that respect, I've had to change most things. If you look back 5 years, most things that were happening back then are not happening now.
You can feel the change.
Talk to me about that. Come on, let me ask you. You can feel the change. Yes. This could go either way, listeners. It really could. So what do you mean by that? You tell me what you think.
Well, I only had, I forgot her name, but the previous head teacher for year seven, so I can't remember loads. But it's just like clear, like the standards that were like acceptable then. You could do, not whatever you want, but it was quite like chill. I think the biggest change is like a student would have been the uniform as well, like the whole thing. I remember that the department's changing, like just like small things like that, but they were noticeable, and it was reinforced that this is not going to be the same as it was anymore. Like there's new standards, we're behaving differently, we're acting differently, and we're going to be better.
And do you think behaving differently and acting differently has been a better thing?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so the expectations that we have, I mean, you've lived them. Yeah. You've been through the full school. I can remember when you were in a red tie, having to tell you off at times.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I remember that.
You know? So going back to those times when, I mean, because you have lived good 5 years with me now, haven't you?
Yeah.
So over that period of time, are we getting it right?
I think so, yeah. I think this is a really good school.
Okay. What makes you say that?
Well, I think there's good standards and good support for people. So I've not exactly like, had the easiest time during school, but I've always had people to support me when I've not been having the easiest time to make it as easy as possible.
And you always will.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we get a bad reputation because I'm well known for my behaviour standards and expectations. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to apologise for that.
You shouldn't have to.
Well, thank you very much. I think some people would like me to. Some would like me to be a little bit softer and a little bit more fluffy and grey around the edges. But the truth is, society won't expect that.
Yeah.
And we should have a moral obligation, in my view, as a school, to, yes, teach the curriculum, but that should be the given. Mm-hmm. But what we've got to do is prepare young people for life out there. And I'm not going to use the moniker that life is unfair and then behave in an unfair manner. That's not what I mean. But what I mean is that if you have standards which are lower than they should be, young people will always, children do, test the boundaries. They want clear boundaries and want to know what those boundaries are. And the truth is that discipline's a really important word in school. If you have it, broadly speaking, your culture will be better and learning will not be disrupted. And we're here to make sure that young people can learn and not have their learning disrupted by poor behaviour. Do we always get it right? No, of course we don't, because we work in a human industry. Very, very few communities will you ever get within society where you've got 1,300 people coming together in one place all at the same time for 6 to 7 hours a day minimum. And I've got 173 staff, 172 plus me, and I've got 1,300 of all of you. The responsibilities are significant. I take them very seriously. I work incredibly hard, but so do my teams. You know, sometimes parents will say to me, there's been such and such disruptive behaviour in a lesson. Even in outstanding schools, that is going to happen because children will be children.
Yeah.
You know, but it's how you deal with things like that. It's how you deal with bullying. I won't tolerate that. I simply won't. And I know that there are certain places where you'll hear comments made about me where, you know, a child was bothered and we didn't do our job properly and this, that and the other. But I would always say that the culture broadly dictates the pace.
Yeah.
And we always set out to deal with things like bullying. I won't tolerate that. I think that it's just morally inappropriate to ignore or not deal with it properly. And so I won't apologise for the way that we deal with things. Will I always try and improve? Yes. Will I listen to feedback? If it's sensible feedback, absolutely. I think that there is a need for us to always be looking at where we're at and where we're going.
Yeah.
You know, is there a way that we can improve something, whether it's a marginal gain or a large gain? Could we be doing something differently to get better effect? You know, one thing that I think we do more of now is talking to you. You know, and by you, I mean the student body more broadly. You won't always know what's right, but you'll often give us an indication of how you think you'll learn better. And I think young people often get a bad reputation, you know, for having no manners or not behaving quite so well. Yeah. But actually, that's not my experience of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, young people actually have got their head screwed on the right way.
Yeah.
And I'm more than happy to talk to you about how you might improve things for them better. And I think, look, you know, in terms of impact, I could sit here all day long. And tell you about all the things that I've done. I'd even forget things off the list. But the truth is, I'm not done yet. Mm-hmm. I've been here 5 years. It's a huge project. And there's still plenty more to be done. I want this school to be an outstanding school. Mm-hmm. It's pretty close right now. Pandemic notwithstanding. But probably not going to off the turns today. But the truth is that until some folk leave here and go somewhere else, they don't realise how good it is here.
Yeah.
And I think that is sometimes the acid test. We have a lot of people want to come back when they've left because they realise they've gone somewhere else that isn't as good.
Yeah.
And for me, that's actually not a bad position to be in, really. Mm-hmm. But look, in terms of what the impact is or isn't, we're oversubscribed pretty much in every year group with a waiting list. And so we must be doing something right for the majority of folk who want a good education for their youngsters. So
yeah.
I'll settle for that for now, and we'll see where we end up. As I said, I'm not done yet, so lots more to be done here to make it the best it can be.
Yeah. If you were the Minister of Education, what changes to the curriculum would you make and why?
Oh, that's probably the most controversial question that you've asked me so far. I think it's fair to say we ought to give people a little bit of a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep it apolitical, but I think it's important to do that. I've already mentioned when Labour were in power about the national strategy, which at its time did a lot of really good work in primary and secondary. And then since 2010, when the coalition government came in, things changed. The national strategy came to an end in 2011. And after that, when Michael Gove in particular was the Secretary of State for Education, he brought about a lot of change. A lot of it was controversial. Some would say he did a good job. I think a lot of people would say he didn't. But regardless of that, a lot of lasting change came to the sector. If I were in his role now, and there have been many more since him, and probably haven't lasted as long, I would make some significant changes, mm-hmm. particularly around the sorts of courses that you might or might not study. So mm-hmm. there is at the moment this defunding, they're calling it, of BTECs and certain vocational qualifications that usually stand as single awards, and I think that is wrong. Speaking from a position of expertise, I think that they are very, very strong courses.
Yeah.
For a particular type of learner.
Yeah.
My son's done a selection of them, amongst other things, and I think they've been very successful. I think T-levels that they're bringing in are being very well funded, comparative to most other subjects. But doing the equivalent of 3 A-levels in one discipline mm-hmm. at 16, I think is all a bit too many eggs in one basket. So I'm currently a little nervous about them, and we are intending to run a few in certain select areas, so we have a bidding at the moment to update our hospitality and catering facilities to allow that to happen, because from an industry-specific perspective, we don't currently have a pathway into post-16 for that area that Miss Hodson leads. But if I'm honest, I would be probably bringing some T-levels in whilst not defunding BTECs. I think schools are always the institutions that know their children the best. They also know, in terms of curriculum, what the local area needs. So when we've got industry leaders like Lindab out there for construction, Siemens out there with engineering in mind, why would we be not meeting need? We need our young people to lead with the skills required for those industry leaders to have the right people going in at apprenticeship level or a graduate level or whatever it might be. So I think that, for me, there is a need for us to be able to use our academy freedoms in a way that we currently can't. I personally would prefer to keep BTECs and CTECs, and some of them are being defunded. So my son did our health and social care, really enjoyed it. I know we run it here, but in a couple of years' time, that won't exist anymore. And I think that's a shame, given the NHS has 130,000 vacancies. So for me, that's one area I'd go to. The other one is less about the curriculum and more about educational structures. You may have seen the headlines lately about Ofsted. And you're shaking your head, okay. Then another little lesson for folk then. I mean, Ofsted inspections are something I get threatened with all the time.
Yeah.
I've always got somebody telling me they don't like what I'm doing. If you don't get what I want from you, I'm going to report you to Ofsted. Well, that's fine. You carry on. But Ofsted for me is, I would make changes. They are making some changes to inspections. There was quite recently a head teacher in primary whose school was going to be downgraded from outstanding to inadequate on safeguarding grounds for certain reasons. And she took her own life. And there's been a big debate, therefore, about the impact on school leaders and teachers of inspection. Now, I'm certainly not going to say that, sit and say schools should not be inspected. It's always good to be held to account.
Yes.
Never going to argue that we shouldn't be, but I would make more changes to Ofsted. So some of them are good changes I'm bringing in, such as hopefully telling us which academic year we're going to be inspected in. Yeah. I think that's really mature and sensible. You know, we are intelligent professionals, believe it or not, after 4 or 5 years at university. The hope would be, therefore, when we're told we're going to be inspected, that the journey will be complete by the next time that we get an inspection team in. But I do think that one of the debates that's going on at the moment that we don't look like we're going to see any immediate change in is around inspections that have a one-word outcome at the end. Mm-hmm. Now, I've led schools before, and one of the things I'm most proud of, in fact, is having led my first school in Peterborough to an outstanding judgment. Mm-hmm. Some very nice things were written about me and the school in that report, but schools, I've already said, are part of a human industry. It's almost intangible at times. It's a bit crass, in my view, mm-hmm. to try to judge a school, particularly one of 1,300 youngsters with 7 year groups and 170 odd folk, of which 80 are teachers, with one word. And I think that schools are not that sort of institution. So I think we need a more nuanced approach to inspection. I need to be more collaborative. Sometimes it has in the past. To be fair, not at our last inspection. We had a very positive experience in 2019. But there have been times in inspections when it's been felt that things have been done to you. And there is a punitive feel to how inspections are viewed. And to be fair, it's a very, very intense week, a very stressful time. And one where I think we could go further with sensible consultation to make sure the inspection regime is appropriate. But everything has to evolve in its time. We've spoken a little bit about our 70 years and our evolution over time. I think that Ofsted needs to learn to do the same. And if it did, I think you'd also find more head teachers buying into its appropriacy.
Yeah.
As opposed to at the moment, where we know it happens and we all deal with it, and I'm more than versed at dealing with Ofsted inspections, but they are a little bit white-knuckle ride at the moment, and I think there are ways that we could improve that. And that's something I'd certainly like to see happen. So I've half answered your question, and then I've ducked it and gone somewhere else. That's probably the best answer I can give you.
Yeah, that's cool. What's the biggest difference, would you think, to a child's learning during their time in school?
Without wishing to sound facetiously, of actually being here, first of all.
Yeah.
We have, since the pandemic, seen a drop in attendance, which is a national thing, and our attendance is still higher than national at the moment, but if youngsters aren't here, we can't teach them. If we can't teach them, they're not going to benefit from it. So I think that, you know, we would always talk about attendance being the most important thing and try to ensure that youngsters do walk through our door. Beyond that, though, we talk about QFT, quality first teaching. Having a good teacher, and a consistently good teacher, in front of any class, in any subject specialism, will always be the best difference you can make. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a teacher in front of a class who's not very good, the youngsters are going to learn less. And if they learn less, they'll get worse outcomes. Worse outcomes is less good grades, and so on and so forth. So that's what I meant when I said I've tried to address some of the inadequacies in teaching from the past. I'm confident that at the moment, as I speak to you today, we've got the strongest set of staff I've ever had here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your view is on that.
Yeah, I think the staff are great.
You agree?
Yeah.
And that has been through 4 to 5 years of pretty intense recruitment, mm-hmm. you know, changes when necessary, taking some difficult decisions at certain times, which is always what happens as a head. You can't keep everybody happy, and nor should you try, otherwise you're not doing your job properly. So I would say that you need good teachers in front of children, and you need to accept the fact when someone is not doing well enough with the children they've got in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about you being in year 8 when I came. Mm-hmm. Look at you now. You're now finishing year 12.
Yeah.
The time flies. And if we don't, you know, if we don't use all that time, if we don't take the opportunity to spend it wisely and make sure that we have recruited and retained good quality people, then I'm not doing a very good job. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are listeners out there thinking, you know, I'm talking guff. But the truth is, if people turn up, and regularly turn up and turn up well, and you've got good teachers in all the good subjects in front of those young people, broadly speaking, you're going to have great education.
Yeah.
So for me, that's the biggest difference. It's not that complicated.
Yeah.
It really isn't.
When becoming a teacher or a head teacher, did anyone inspire you, / what inspired you to become a head teacher?
Well, to become a teacher, I was inspired by my German teacher. My German teacher was a lady called Miss Lang. She was actually at school in the same year group as my mum, which I didn't find out until much later, in fact. And she was one of the warmest, most intelligent teachers I've ever come across, who taught in a different way. German, this is my best subject, is obviously very grammatical. It's like painting by numbers but without a brush. And if you follow the rules, you're broadly going to be okay. My first year in what would have been year 8 was very grammatical and very, I don't know, a bit staid. I was taught by a teacher who went on to retire very soon after. And I was taught all of my case tables, my nominative, my accusative, my genitive and my dative, which mean nothing to you.
Yeah.
But I could recite them now like a performing seal. Mm-hmm. Whereas in year 9 and onwards, I was taught by the same lady for 5 years, till year 13. Who got me through A-level, and I wouldn't have got there without her. And I was just very inspired by the way that she treated people, very inspired by the way she taught me to speak and understand German. When I was going abroad and certainly doing work, you know, beyond A-level, I had the privilege in the end to, when I first came into teaching, was working at William Robertson, to lead on training foreign language assistants across the county. And one of my greatest privileges was to have worked with her again. We did it together. And I always remember one day I was leading on how to do some sort of game in language, and she turned to me as we were training these folks and said, "Dale, what do you think?" And I thought, wow, I remember when you were teaching me and I was 13, and now you're asking me, 20 odd plus years on, what I think we should do. For me, that just meant that I'd arrived, and I felt the value of that. So, you know, Janet Lang, God rest her soul, because I know she's no longer with us, but she was very much the inspiration for me becoming a teacher. And my inspiration for becoming a head teacher was a gentleman called Peter Hollick, who is recently retired, but was taught me more about myself than I thought I could possibly learn. I came with the educational understanding and a lot of the strategic knowledge, and he was just a great leader of people. And he taught me an incredible amount about dealing with all sorts of folk, and it was a real inspiration to me. And when I got my first outstanding judgment and then got a good again here, he was one of the first people to congratulate me. and said he never doubted me, which was great. So they're the two main people. And I think it's wonderful because when you work in a career for as long as we do, there are always people you come across who leave a footprint somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they've certainly left a footprint on my career. Yeah. So I'm very excited by that.
That's very nice. This question's a bit more outside of school and academic and more you as a person, but what do you generally like to do outside of school / your job?
Ah, okay. Well, I have a new initiative which is sort of work-related, but just last night I had my first meeting of the North Wycombe Town Council Community Committee. I'm not a councillor, but I'm a non-councillor member because of my role here at school. And I do a lot of volunteer work, and so to do this as well is nice. I was invited to do it by the Mayor, so the Mayor of North Wycombe, Keith Sampson, came to our show on the 6th of February for the Gala Night, and invited me to become part of that committee. So outside of school, I'll sometimes be found, as I was last night, at the civic offices until quite late, doing meetings like that, which means a lot to me because it's making a difference in my view. I still am chair of a cricket club.
Yeah.
I'm not playing, it's my first season having retired. I'm nearly 49, Liv. And to quote Paul Scholes, I have a quote every week. I'm accidentally shoehorning one in without meaning to. But Paul Scholes, when he left Man United to retire, said the body no longer does what the mind tells it to.
Yeah.
And I think I've got to that point where I've realised I can't throw, I can't bat, and I was never really very good at bowling. So it's time to quit. And so I'm on the sidelines now, doing a lot of the work in the back room. Apart from that, I still have a thirst for knowledge. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier what book I'm reading. Yeah. You'll always find me usually reading the news headlines, reading a newspaper, reading a book. I'll often be speaking to my senior team where I'll comment on things that are going on in the world. Not all of them will know what I'm talking about, because I'd like to be widely read if I can be. But other than that, it's just spending time with family.
Yeah.
My daughter's 21 and completing her degree in English. My son is about to go to university, hopefully to study wildlife conservation. And I spend a lot of time with them. My only disappointment is that I will no longer play cricket with my boy, which I've had the wonderful opportunity to do for many years. And I'm just too old and too rubbish to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's about keeping the brain active for me. Mm-hmm. I work exceptionally hard here, and you think after that I don't need to keep the brain active, I've got enough going on. But there's one life to live and plenty of difference to make, and so I want to use my hours wisely while I have them. Mm-hmm. So that's the best answer I can give you to that one.
Quite inspirational.
Oh, that's very kind of you. A lot of people think I'm rubbish. Thank you for that.
No, that's good. What is the best advice that anyone's ever given you growing up?
That's got to come from my dad. Mm-hmm. So I was the first to go to university in my family. Mm-hmm. We were not well off.
Yeah.
My mum quit work when I was born and lived off my father's factory wage. He left school at 15 to become a gentleman's barber and then worked in a factory from the 60s until he retired, and he's now nearly 81. But neither of my parents had qualifications on leaving school. And left school in the 60s where you could generally walk into a job the same day. So my mum went back to night school and spent quite a lot of time getting qualifications as an adult, which she always told me not to do, because after a full day at work going back to Grantham College was a nightmare. So that was always good advice. But my father always said to me, he always describes himself as an uneducated man, which I think he's doing himself now. But he always said to me, if you honestly know you've done your best, and you can look yourself in the mirror and say, I couldn't have done any more, and that's fine, son. Mm-hmm. And no one can take anything away from you. Whatever grade you get, whatever piece of work in life you might be doing, if you know that you have pulled out the stops and done the best that you could and looked in the mirror, and you haven't got any regrets, then that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've taken with me. You know, if you do your best in everything, and you come up short by somebody's standard, then you haven't got too much reason to be disappointed, because you've tried hard. And if you've tried hard and haven't given up, you know, and you've done all that you could, then there isn't anything to lose any sleep over. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the best advice that I've had.
Yeah,
it means I'm contented with myself, mm-hmm. that I have done all that I can.
Yeah.
Do I make mistakes every day? Yes. Do I learn from them? Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do live in a society that likes to blame.
Yeah.
It's always got to be somebody's fault. Well, I prefer to be more solution focused. Right. The simple reality is that we're all going to make mistakes all the time. Mm-hmm. It's if you don't learn from them that they become perennial problems. So look, it's got to be Dad who is a bit of a hero of mine because of all the things that he's made in me.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, there you go.
That's awesome. For our last question, to tie it off, we're going to talk about your achievements in your career and what you're most proud of in yourself.
Oh, crikey. Well, I suppose, as a head, getting that outstanding judgment in my first school has got to be up there somewhere. You know, it's not that many heads who get an opportunity to do that. Sometimes it needs the stars to align, along with, you know, so you need a bit of luck, but also it's about hard graft and good leadership skills. I'd like to think I showed that, so I think my first outstanding judgment at Ofsted would be one of those. Getting a good judgment here in 2019, because when I first came, school was not in great shape, in my view, and I wasn't sure it was going to be touch and go if we'd get that good judgment, and actually it was good with the following win in the end. So I was pleased with that in 2019. I suppose, I mean, it sounds a bit glib, but if you're asking what I'm most proud of, then a working class boy from the Ursfield estate in Grantham, which certainly at the time I lived on it was the most challenging in terms of antisocial behaviour and public order, and the most deprived estate in the county. If I can become head teacher of the year, I think anybody can do anything, because that to me, I've got to be proud of, and to do it here. You know, I told you I'm not done. I feel that this place has got under my skin a bit. I enjoy working here. It's really hard work, but it's incredibly fulfilling. And I am, whether some people tell me I am or not, I think I'm making a difference. Mm-hmm. And whilst I continue to make a difference, and whilst I continue to feel that is the case, and I still feel that I'm enjoying it, I'm going to continue doing it and making a difference to the lives of young people. And, you know, very soon, I think it's a few weeks from now, and I've not been nominated this year, and I don't mind at all. Someone else will take on that mantle of head teacher of the year, but it was my year last summer, and I think it epitomised for me 4 years of hard graft. It felt like it paid homage to the fact that we got it right broadly during the pandemic. I think the pandemic was unprecedented for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, for us to have to learn on the hoof as a country, but equally for us to have to make value decisions based on best intelligence at a time when we didn't know what COVID really meant to us. I can look back with hindsight and broadly speaking think we came out of it okay. I think we held our own and did quite well. So I was pleased with the head teacher of the year. It's not the be all and end all. I don't do it for the gons, you know, but to get it because we were where we were and we managed to achieve what we had, I think was something to be proud of. And after I got that, actually, I took it to show my dad, my mum, and yeah, that was in itself humbling, because having an only son who's gone to university and done that, from such humble beginnings, they were particularly proud. Mm-hmm. And I'll live with that.
Yeah.
I really will.
That's really nice. Did you have anything else that you wanted to say before we ended it?
I think I've said a lot.
You have said a lot.
Thanks ever so
much. No, not in a bad way. Just you've said a great amount.
Well, thank you, Liv. I don't think we should edit that. I think that's absolutely where we should finish. Folks, if you're listening to this, I think what it shows is that we value our youngsters here. It's wonderful to be able to talk to Liv today, but it'll be the first of several and hopefully many podcasts. It's good that our young people feel that they can talk to the head in the way that Liv just has.
I didn't mean it that
bad. I know what you meant. Don't worry. You're fine. But what you have had is a little bit of an insight today into where we're going to be going, particularly with the sixth form. Sixth form will be leading, Liv will be, in her time on the SLT, be leading on our podcasting. And you will see this sort of content on our main website, or the sixth form website, or both. And I hope there's been a bit of an insight into what we're going to be looking to do, because my weekly letters are one avenue that we can communicate with you, but it's not the only one, and we're always looking to evolve and try and make changes. So if you are listening to this interview with Liv from our sixth form, I suppose a good way of finishing off would first of all to thank you, Liv, for the invitation to do it. You're very welcome. I appreciate your time in setting it up, and some really, really good questions, actually. So thank you for that. And I'll look forward to the podcast next week with the other students. I know that we're going around the rest of the school with that, which will be great. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please, you know, please tell everybody that you know. It would be lovely if local folk listen to local podcasts and know more about our academy. But in the meantime, from me, it's a goodbye. Liv, anything else?
That's all from me, so I guess it's a goodbye too. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Take care, everybody.